everyone, and welcome to episode 556 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I was just catching up on football this weekend, and
oh god, don't bring up football.
it's just so many funny things happened. It was like kind of weird, but I don't want to get into it. But just check out the NFL highlights. But lots of funny things this weekend.
And we have another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Good morning. It's going all right. Freshly removed from my bed.
Hey.
So I'm excited.
Sounds like podcast time. Yep.
Yep. Yep. Good morning. Good morning.
So today we're going to be jumping around a little bit. There was some interesting conversations going on in the Magic internet this past week. There was a video by Kibler talking about his take on where Magic's at and universes beyond. There was this now kind of infamous pigs and slop post we wanted to get into. Some news about Hasbro going deep on making actual game studios. And then answering some fish mail, maybe talking some Spider-Man in standard. So that's the plan for today. Before we get into it, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service, resending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more, and pay just a 5% fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use a sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Today's show is also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The ETB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing to fit in your standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. Equip Mag lets you snap all your gear onto your playmat to move between rounds. Not that you're going to need it, because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. Head over to heavyplay.com/mtgoldfish or use the code MTGGoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to Heavy Play for supporting our show as well. And let's talk some Magic. And I think we got to start with the big conversation of the past week. I don't know if either one of you saw this on the Magic internets, but there was this internet post about pigs and slop, which kind of took over the Magic internet this past week. So to set the stage for what this is, my understanding of this is it was posted by a longtime competitive Magic player by the name of Jeffrey White on his Twitter. And it kind of just took off from there and went to all the social media. I don't know if I'm going to read this entire post, but essentially, the post talks about going to your favorite restaurant that you've went to for many years now and suddenly realizing that there's a new menu item, which is slop. And the slop is to feed the pigs, according to the waiter. And over time, the menu just merges into being all slop. And pretty soon the restaurant's unrecognizable and you don't even want to go to that restaurant anymore. And when you bring up what's going on with the restaurant, people essentially get two replies from people, which are either people that say, I'm a pig and I eat slop, or the restaurant's doing so well and it has so many patrons, how can you possibly be upset? Getting more customers into the restaurant has to be a good thing. But basically, the feeling that this restaurant is no longer for that person because it's changed. And I'm very curious, first off, what do you guys think of this post? What's your initial reaction to this? Because my God, everyone has been talking about it for the past week.
Oink, oink. Call me the slop eater, slop goblin. I am here for it. Do not care. Anybody that uses slop genuinely and unironically, I'm sorry. Everything that you've said has gone out the other ear, because I think that the idea of slop and all of that just does not matter to me, right? Like, if you genuinely are this upset about this stuff, about a children's card game, I applaud you. Be as angry as you want to be. Voice about it however you need to be. But if you are asking me, I do not care about this thing. This article or whatever, this post is just comical, right? I'm like, hey, oink, oink, give me more. So do not care.
Oh, Richard, what do you think of this?
So this post, I don't even know where it came from. Seth had to just explain it to me right now, but many versions of it have been circulating the internet. Like, you see the comics, pigs and slop, Everyone's seen it. And I always thought it was like some clever, like, Animal Farm reference, or, you know, like some like old book. I'm like, what does this mean? Now that I get it, it's true. But is it that bad? Is my question, because that's how everything is, right? Like, name your favorite restaurant. Like, literally, the story is telling you, right? Like, your restaurant, your band, movies. How many times have we heard film is dead, right? Like, even YouTube has been ruined now by TikTok, and even TikTok has been ruined by the current generation of TikTok. I don't know. So it obviously, I think, is true, right? Like, if you've been playing Magic since 1995, and let's be real, there's none of us, okay? So let's say you've been playing Magic since 2005, right? That's still like 20 years ago, right? Or like 15 years ago. The game is just unrecognizable, right? Like, how we played the game back then is not how we play the game today, like, at all, right? But there are many things that are unrecognizable, like how you live your life. Remember 15 years ago, you went outside and talked to people and, like, touched grass and, like, had conversations and were, like, accepting and tolerant of other views and stuff like that? Like, that's all gone, right? Like, kind of life has all changed. And do you enjoy Magic today is the question. And I think that's what you got to ask. But also at the same time, it's like super gatekeepy to be like, it's got to be like what it's got to be like 15 years ago, right? Because 15 years ago, Magic was kind of inaccessible. Everyone was scared away. No one really wanted to play. And it was just like your niche nerdy, like, you know, your little circle of friends kind of thing. That's what made it very cool, right? Like, that's what made the original, like, Grand Prix, like, super cool, right? Because that was the one time of the year you could go talk Magic with other people that loved Magic. And, you know, when you talked about it in real life, everyone would just laugh at you and, like, you're like, okay, cool, right? But now you can talk to everyone because everyone knows about Final Fantasy, you know, Magic the Gathering or Spider-Man Magic the Gathering. It's less special. It's different. Is it still fun? I don't know. Is it slop? I don't know, right? Slop is kind of like a derogatory term, right? I don't know what a nice term is for, like, commoditized or something, right? Yeah, corporate shield, you know? Like, I don't know what the nice term for that is, but, like, made accessible to normal people, whatever that is. Like, when your favorite punk band, like, sells out so that normal people can listen. What is that called in a nice way? Who's done it in a nice way?
Oh, yeah. The framing of this is very interesting. My initial reaction as soon as I read it is, I think, kind of similar to Richard, that, like, yes, I think someone's expressing, like, real feelings that make sense to me. Like, I could see how someone would feel exactly this way about the changes that have happened to Magic. The framing, I thought at first, I think it does a disservice to the argument. And if you had written it in another way, because the conversation really got derailed into, oh my God, they called people pigs, or oh my God, they said it was slop or something, rather than thinking about, like, what it's at the point of what this is actually trying to say about the changes in Magic. So my initial reaction was, okay, I get what this person's saying, but if they had not used this wording, that it probably would have went over better. But then the more I thought about it as the week went by, I was like, actually, maybe in 2025 and in the internet era, maybe this actually is the most effective way to word it, because the internet just rewards you for saying outrageous things because people get angry and repost them. And, like, what do you think of the framing? Is this, like, brilliant framing? Because there were this was the conversation in Magic. And if you'd wrote this in a commodification way or something, no one would have noticed it and it wouldn't have been a big deal. Or is it horrible framing? Because it honestly does come across a little bit, like, mean, maybe insensitive, like, something along those lines to me. But what do you think of the actual choice of words?
I mean, do you like click farming? Like, it's just that simple, right? Like, if you think click farming is fine, then I think it's whatever, right? Like, for me, it's just like, eh. Somebody probably has some genuine sentiment here, but I just kind of stopped caring after I read part of it, right? So, like, there's probably something really underneath all of the slop that I just read. And so
so for Krim, it just the framing, actually, like, if it was worded in a different way, you might have been more likely to actually read the entire message, basically.
Yeah, I actually just didn't. Yeah, I think if it were something that seemed like a genuine concern, I would have probably, and it were framed differently, I'd probably read it more, right?
I think it's accurate. I don't think you can, because there is a message of meanness, right? So at the end of the day, what they're trying to say is, like, Magic has been dumbed down or is, like, low effort product, right? So, like, You know, when you make pig slop, you're not like, oh, you know, Michelin star. You know, you're just like, whatever, throw in a bucket, give it to the pigs, right? So they do mean that. And they also mean that the consumers of such product don't care, right? Like, the pigs don't care. They eat everything. This may be totally, I don't know what pigs are like, but that's what, you know, that's what they're trying to say, which I'm just going to agree with, right? So, man, like, like, they kind of mean it, right? And they are being mean, right? I think they are trying to say, like, you people who buy Universes Beyond or whatever are a problem. Like, that's what the message is trying to say, right? Like, Wizards is only making this because you keep buying it, right? So they're saying it, right? So I think that's an effective message, right? Now, of course, you can be nice about it, but wait, no, that doesn't gather engagement on the internet, right? And it is still true, right? Like, the message is in part being carried by the words they use, and I don't think we're misinterpreting it. I don't think they meant it to be like the, you know, some nice compliment on WotC and we're all just misinterpreting it. I think we're interpreting it the way they meant it to be interpreted, right? And it's up to, you know, the individual to decide whether it's fair or not. You know what I mean? Like, you know, am I really a pig? And is this really slop? And is it the end of the world? You know, sometimes we just want to eat some McDonald's, you know? It's okay. It doesn't have to be like a fancy sit-down meal, right? But,
that's true.
You know, if you go to a fancy sit-down restaurant and they serve you McDonald's, you're like, wait a minute, what happened, right? So, you know, is it the expectation is mismatched? Have we all been thinking we're getting steak and fries or steak and fries? Like steak and gravy or something, right? And we just ended up with chicken nuggets, right? Or did we go in expecting chicken nuggets and got chicken nuggets? And, you know, is the idea of saying Magic the Gathering, which, you know, enfranchised people would long say, you know, it's the greatest game ever. And, you know, that's a steak, right? Is the fact that we're calling it chicken nuggets now like a bad thing, right? I think it's an effective message. Now, it's just mean, but it got you thinking, right? And yeah, I think it's true, but kind of mean, right? Like, just let people enjoy what they enjoy, right? And the numbers don't lie, right? Like, Wizards is wildly successful because people enjoy this. And you know what? McDonald's is a very large food franchise, right? Like, you know, is it the best food? Probably not, but, you know.
My question would be, like, couldn't you just do both? Like, isn't there a world where you can do Universes Beyond or support Commander or, like, do what this post would be calling slop, but still serve the steak at the restaurant? Like, does it have to be an either-or situation? Because I feel like it doesn't have to be. I feel like there's a world where you can support someone who's been playing for 20 years and wants to play 60-card formats while also doing Universes Beyond and, like, I feel like part of the problem is it was just, like, so much of the 60-card stuff was taken away or, like, not managed or, like, just, like, they took away the Pro Tours. And, yeah, they kind of brought them back now. But, like, we've seen, like, just so much be taken away from 60-card players. Isn't there a world where the restaurant could also be serving a steak and serving the slop for the people who want it? Like, do you think that's the issue? Or is it just all slop?
Yes, but
it's
not profitable. You know what I mean? Like, they can make a set that's dedicated to, like, hardcore 60-card players, and it sells average. Or they can make 7 Final Fantasies that, like, blow their numbers through the roof time and time again. Right? Like, they follow where the numbers go. They didn't just arrive at this yesterday. Right? Or, like, just go back, like, 10 years where they start cutting back the Pro Tour and, like, actually, it makes no difference. Right? And then, oh, they just start adding Commander cards into standard products. Actually, they sell, like, way better. Right? Okay, we'll just stop playtesting standard altogether. Hey, guys, the numbers didn't even change. Right? And, like, you know, 15 years later, it all adds up, and now you're at slop. Right? So, and slop is making more money than ever. So I think that's the problem, right? Like, if they do the one set for 60-card players, will it actually move the needle in any meaningful way? I don't know. But I feel like they figure that it doesn't. And just, like, sending out Spider-Man, like, some last-minute pivot without digital rights or whatever, like, was deemed better than, like, going with, like, a normal standard set. And we don't know what the numbers are. Maybe they turned out to be right? Maybe they turned out to be wrong. But, like, they're making those decisions due to, like, their primary factor, which is making money. And given how much money Hasbro and Wizards is making compared to last year, compared to 5 years ago, their strategy is working. right? The real thing that we're all worried about is, like, we're not actually pigs, we're slop, and we're going to get scurvy in, like, 2 years. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you could eat, like, right? instant noodles and hot dogs for 4 years of college, and then when you hit 30, you just die, right? Yeah. Like, that's what we're worried about. It's okay until it's not okay, right? So I think that's what all the real fans are worried about. Like, yeah, we could take some slop, but, like, how much slop can we take before we fall over? Or actually, are we just pigs? We're fine, you know, fully nutritious, eating hot dogs or whatever, right? But, you know, I think we're just worried we're just going to die.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a concern that, like, it goes back to the McDonald's thing, right? Having a McDonald's burger once in a while is fine, but if you're doing McDonald's every meal every day, I think they've made documentaries about what happens when you do that, and it's not actually good if you just eat fast food every meal every day.
Oh, did you actually read about that? That's, like, not actually accurate.
Yeah.
Apparently, raging alcoholic.
Yeah.
It was covered up for something. And it was actually like, not as bad as you think it was.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that it had been debunked. I just remember, Super Size Me or whatever the movie was. Oh, interesting. Interesting. Well, anyway, let's tie this in to broader standard, because this has been an interesting week in Magic. I feel like, as far as the content that's been put out from people I follow, it has been one of the more negative weeks, or a couple of weeks, that I can remember. And Brian Kibler, Hall of Famer, posted a really interesting video. The title of the video was basically, let me get it correct, "The Problems with the Universe is Beyond, Even If You're Not a Hater." And I think the interesting part of this video, for me, is Kibler actually believes a lot like I do, which is, as long as the game is good, I really don't care about a lot of this crap. If you want to put Dwight on a secret lair drop and you want to do all these Universes Beyond sets, as long as the actual game is good, and that's the focus, is to make the game good, that stuff doesn't really bother me. And I think Kibler made a pretty, I thought, convincing argument that some of the choices that have been made lately actually aren't with the best interest of the game itself in mind. And I think the easiest example of this was the Shocklands. And we all knew the Shockland thing was weird, right? It was supposed to come out this fall in Lorwyn, but then they pushed it back so they could do Spider-Man. So we already knew it was weird because we have like 6 months of standard with hilariously unbalanced mana. But then it was even worse than I realized, because they switched rotation to being at the first of the year. So now that the second half of the Shocks come out in January, they're actually going to rotate half the Shocks a year before the rest of the half of the Shocks. So stuff like that, I think, is a pretty clear example of what's best for the actual game of Magic, kind of taking the back burner, right, to, we need to release this set now, or maybe we have something Kibler brought up. We don't know all these contracts. We don't know, like, once you let other people be partners in your game, you don't have control over this stuff. Maybe they contractually needed to release a Marvel set in 2025. We have no way of knowing that, but you have this extra pressure. I thought the video was really good. I'm curious what you guys think. Like, is the game getting worse because of these changes? Because that's what actually concerns me in all this. Not the Dwight Seeker layer drop or whatever, regardless of whether it's cringe or not. But what do you think of the argument that the actual game is suffering because of some of this stuff?
I think Kibler's got a point there with when it comes to rotation. I think this is a very real concern, because much like you, if the game is not good, then there is a problem, right? And it will be awkward to have half the fetches. So I am curious on how that's going to play out. Personally, I don't like that. As you've also known, I am not an enjoyer right now of having to remember two sets, right? Whether it's like Omen Path and then normal Spider-Man, right? Like,
that's been
like
awkward.
That part of it has been a disaster, right? Like, so I do really much so agree with a good amount of the points that, at least from what Seth has kind of told me about the video, the TLDR. So, like, I am concerned about it. I'm not sure how you fix that, right? Like, other than they plan on reprinting the Shocks again in a later set that would then cycle out with the ones that are coming out at the beginning of the year with Lorwyn. So I am very curious about that. And you know, when it comes to like working with so many partners, that can mean so many things, whether or not like you can, like you had, like why we have this digital set when you have to release things. So I am very curious about all of that. And it is a problem, right? If you do not have control over your game, right? Like the one thing here is As much as I love everything coming to Magic, I'm now curious, when do we see Magic come to other things, right? Like, so where is the give and take in all of this, right? So if you're telling me that Marvel is telling you to put out this set this time, great. You know, if you're going to do whatever you're going to have to do, but like, does this mean that Magic gets something back as well?
Yeah, you didn't hear, Krim? Jace is going to be in the next X-Men movie. He's the fifth X-Man.
If first off, you know what? There's a lot of X-Men, so Jace is very far in the back of that line. Second off, that would be really funny, and I would kill to see that because I want to see anything Magic movie related. But I am very curious about that. And then from a gameplay standpoint, I am obviously worried about having half shocks and whatnot. So
does it matter, Richard? Does it matter? Is this just my so I agree with almost word for word everything Kibler said, but I also thought maybe none of this matters. And it's just like, who cares about Standard? We're selling so many cards to Commander players, which then I guess kind of ties back into the pigs and slop argument that other person made, that they're just selling so much to the things I don't care about that it feels like slop to me. But what do you think? Does it actually matter?
So it matters to us, the sweaty tournament grinders. Of course it matters, right? And I am pretty sure if I took like a poll, if I just went back in time every year, what do you think about the current state of competitive Magic? It's just a line going like straight down over time, right? You're like, what is even playtesting nowadays? You know what I mean? The fact that a new Standard set comes out and like no one's excited because like nothing's being played, like, you know, like literally nothing's being played. There's always some broken deck and then you go to the next broken deck. Gameplay's not engaging, stuff like that. But there's this other segment of players that are extremely happy where the line is going up, right? Those are the casual players. Those are the universes beyond enjoyers. And those people far outnumber the competitive players, right? And you can actually just, like, see like the distinct points of like death in timeline, right? Like when SCG Sundays or whatever went off air, right? Yep. When those like big SCG tournaments went off air, when they started cutting back Pro Tour, right? Like when they started cutting like Hall of Fame invites and stuff like that. And like when their tournament system changed like every 6 months for no reason. Mm. So no one knew how to like actually queue for like a higher level event. Like it's all going down. And that's because like sweaty people are outnumbered like 100-1 by casual people. Right? Sweaty people are just simply not profitable. Right. When a new card comes out, we're like, buy singles. You know, first we got to play test. We got to print proxies and test for 120 hours and see if this playset of mythics is absolutely necessary. And when we do, we will wait 6 weeks for the lowest possible price and buy them. Right. Whereas a casual player is like, oh, Sephiroth, Surge Foil. $400. Okay. Yeah. Done. Right? You're like, that person is way more profitable. And that's how we're here. The question is, can the game sustain itself like this? Because it was kind of sustained at least for the first 20 years off like the tournament scene. Right? Because we're so enfranchised, because we stayed up and watched all the pro tours, because we followed all our favorite pros and stuff like that, right? The game continued. Can we hold the line with like scalpers and Poke Bros and stuff like that, right? Hasbro thinks they can do it. I think this is where everyone's concerned, right? Can it actually hold? Because if it does hold, tournament players get like the free ride now, right? Now all of our cards are kind of subsidized by like Chase Commander staples, right? We get so many sets a year, like the actual like imprint base rarity cards are theoretically a lot cheaper than they used to be, right? Like the endless supplies of reprints of fetches and shocks and things like that. But I don't know. I would much rather just go back 10 years where like everyone cared about 60 card formats. There was actually a discussion point because with Commander being the most popular format, like there's nothing to discuss. It's like, really? It's like, well, just play what you like. And did you actually put thought into your deck? You're too sweaty. You just pub stomped us. Go back. Go to your bracket, right? Come to my bracket. You know, rules. Like there's nothing to really discuss versus like, oh, on the play, they played a shock land. What deck are they, you know, what deck are they on, right? Like, you know, they did that. What does that mean, right? Like, you know, like that kind of conversation like does not happen whatsoever in Magic anymore. Like I'm sure if you like you know, go into some pro house, like the three remaining pro houses, you can have that conversation. But that used to be like the conversation at F&M, right? That does not happen anymore. Now it's like, so how's your SpongeBob deck doing? You know, yeah. Are you going to get the new, are you going to get the new Dwight secret lair, right? Like, that's the conversation we have today.
I mean, I do worry and wonder if Wizards eventually is just like, I think it's correct. I agree with everything Kibler was saying, but I wonder if Wizards gets to the point where it's just like not worth it to even do the little bit they do now for like old school 60 card players. And they're just going to be like, wow, those people, they just constantly complain about everything. And like, why we don't make much money off of them anyway. So what's the point of us even having the little bit that we do for, you know, qualifiers and pro tours? Why are we even doing that? Why are we doing arena opens? Like, why bother to do that when it's just so much more profitable to do other things? And then we don't have to deal with these people complaining. Like, do you think Wizards wants the person who's been playing for 20 years to be a part of the game and the community at this point? Like, that actually sounds very harsh, but like, would it just be easier and more profitable if we all went away? Like,
they want to treat us like legacy players. like pretend they support us, but like not really. They don't really care, right? You know what I mean? Like, I hope you keep coming to our Magic Cons and buy stuff. And we'll make it look like it, but like really, we don't care because you don't really buy anything anyway. You know what I mean? Like, your ideal thing is to build modern Jund and keep it unchanged for 15 years. That makes me no money.
That's doing nothing.
Right? You know what I mean? Yeah, like, exactly. That makes me no money, right? So I think it's really like, does Wizards want to support vintage?
I mean,
kind of, but not really. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you know,
yeah,
like
kind
just,
of the same
just to
thing.
Not look bad, but like it's not really getting them anything. And I think every year we're kind of doing that. And I think we are trying to become Pokemon. I guess if you get into Chris Cox's head, you're like, which game do you want to emulate? It would be something like Lego or Pokemon or something. And Pokemon, like, no one plays the game. They just collect, right? And like, the biggest market are like slabs, right? Like that's kind of where they want to go. They make so much money off of that, right?
Why would you not? If you were the CEO, why would you not want to go there? That seems like the ultimate win. Could you imagine? Like, you don't have to worry about anyone complaining about Vivi with Agatha's Soul Cauldron. You don't have to worry about people complaining about, you know, the state of the tournaments or what's going on in Modern these days. Like, if people just buy the cardboard and you don't have to worry about like balancing the actual game, that seems like that would make your life incredibly easy.
Okay, Seth, this is all very, like, doom and gloom and pessimistic, okay? What do you think we should do as, like, people who value 60-card formats do to enact change, aside from writing pigs and sloths? Like, what do you think should actually be done so that Wizards, like, actually supports us in a meaningful capacity, and over time we can take back our market share? What can we do?
Man, that is the question, right? So I think when it comes down to it, it's all about money, but I don't know how to vote with your wallet when it comes to, like, I guess it's support those formats is the most you can do, like, to try to send that message to Wizards, like, actually show up at your qualifier, your LGS, and play 60 card form. Like, what else can you do? Like, we know that it all comes down to money. We know that's the biggest driver of any business, right? Is you're trying to make a profit. And we do know that Wizards, like, researches things, and they always have data and numbers of this many people like this, or this many people bought this. So I think the best plan is actually just to actively support those formats, whether they're good or bad at the time, even if you're not digging the Cauldron meta, show up to your, you know, qualifier. But then that also risks sending the message that you're okay with things being how they are, right? If everyone shows up to all the tournaments and plays the VV Cauldron meta, then why do you ban VV Cauldron? Because everyone's still playing anyway. I don't know. You got a better idea than me, Richard. I wish I had a greater answer to that.
I think you got to at least go to your 60-card format events. Like, standard F&M must be firing every week, right? You must be going to your RCQs and RCs and stuff like that. And you must be watching, like, competitive pro Magic, right? Yeah. Because if you think about how it actually went, remember Wizards used to run events. Then Wizards like, it's too much money. We'll just give it to, like, some other companies to do it. Those other companies like, Wizards, you fool. We took your monopoly. They ran the events. and then the streams, and then those were too popular, so they cut the streams, and then they cut down the events, right? So we need to make sure that we're actually watching these events and supporting them monetarily, right? And we need to make sure we're playing, like, our local events, right? Because if all the RCQs oversell, they sell out, right? What would Wizards do? Schedule more, right? And then we would go to more of them, and they would schedule even more, right? Remember when Grand Prix used to be, like, packed, you know, full, right? Like, we need to oversell things such that Wizards says, hey, you know, we got to make more of them. And then, like, eventually economies of scale kick in somewhere. But, like, if you just sit at home and complain and do nothing, then Wizards is like, yeah, you're right. You're not doing anything. So I do think we actually need to play and buy 60 card products. Like, I don't know what that means. Like, draft? I don't know.
I don't know if you all remember this, but I too enjoy 60 card formats.
And sweaty trim.
I mean, you're keeping your part alive, right? You actually go to the paper events of these sweaty events, right?
I do think, though, there is one problem. Arena. I love Arena. And I play it all day long. And unlike, I do not imagine most people are like me and like playing Standard online. And then when they want to wind down, they go out by playing more Standard. So I genuinely love playing Standard, right? And so but the main thing here is Arena kind of gets in the way of that, because Arena now is like, well, if you want to play Standard, you just play it at home from the comfort of your own desk. You don't actually need to go out. And so because of that, it's like Standard has almost kind of moved towards this, like, unless it's an RCQ, it's an online format.
I mean, I think that's true, but I think you can still do the same thing online, right? Like, if they see the Arena numbers booming and everyone's playing Standard, like, that still would send that message, right? Or they do the Arena opens and tons of people, like, because I think you just want the line to be going up. And I think we've seen the line for Commander be going way up lately and casual play be going way up lately. But the line for competitive play and 60 card play has been going the opposite direction. And I think if we want to save those formats, it really is on us to, like, to just play them and support them to the point that Wizards can't deny that it would be profitable to support them as well, basically. Like, look at Commander. It's the reverse Commander. Like, Commander started with some friends, you know, playing this format that they made up by themselves, and it ended up becoming the biggest format in all of Magic over the course of 20 years. It's possible to do, right? It's possible that if everyone just supports Standard or Modern or Pioneer, Wizards will get along with that, and they will print sets for it, and they will, like, look at Modern Horizons. They started Modern Horizons to be able to, like, sell Modern stuff because Modern was so popular. So we know it can work.
Oh,
God. It's just hard.
You know what my hot take is? They need to collapse the formats. Standard is the only way to play. Like, it made sense before when everyone played 60 card formats. Like, okay, we'll get, like, Modern, we'll get Pioneer, we'll get Legacy, we'll get Vintage, Draft, whatever, and we can split the player base many ways because everyone played that. Now that no one plays any of this, and then you fragment it, it makes it extremely difficult. Like, people just tap out of Modern RCQ season or whatever because I'm like, I'm not buying a Modern deck. I'm like, right? Or I'm not going to play Standard or whatever. It should just be one format for competitive, and you can keep the other formats as casual, like, you know, like Pauper support level, right? But for competitiveness, one format until we're back on our legs, because the player base is too small now to split into so many queues.
I don't know about one. I would probably have Standard and then Modern, or like one format where you can play like most of the cards, and then the like a format that's like for the newer cards. But I wonder if we're already seeing this, because there's been a lot of angst about Pioneer lately, like the last couple of years. This year there was no Pro Tours or no qualifiers. They announced next year there's no Pro Tours. Maybe Wizards is already doing this without announcing it, right? Like, maybe they're realizing that Pioneer, like, just it made sense 10 years ago when 60 card formats were booming, but now it would be better if it didn't exist and those players played Standard or Modern instead, and you kind of funneled all the 60 card players into the same place or same couple of places.
We need Eternal Weekend for Pioneer and Modern. Just like one time a year, everyone who plays Pioneer comes out and has the greatest time of their life. And then they just go to hiding again for another year.
And that actually is another way that we could make this happen. Like, the 60 card people could make this happen. Like, look at Eternal Weekend. That is a big event that is thrown by, and we see this with like Buffalo Chicken Dip Legacy. We see these small, like, small tournament organizers basically making those formats work and doing these things. We could do that with other formats. Like, if there is demand for it and we can fill the building, someone will throw a tournament for Standard or Pioneer or Modern, whatever format you want to play. So maybe it requires that too, just like the community taking up that mantle on their own of like hosting these tournaments. But that requires people showing up for them, because no one's going to spend the money to host an event if, you know, 10 people are going to show up.
I still haven't played a single game of Paper Standard, Seth. My $200 deck investment. My LGS does not fire.
Well, my LGS does not someday. Fire.
That's crazy.
You'll get to play that game. That is wild.
As soon as
again,
it rotates, as soon as my deck rotates, they're like, we fired an event, Richard. Come.
So I think there's one other way that things could change, because the way I view Magic right now is it's under a lot of pressure to basically support Hasbro. I did a whole video on this last week about just like how much of Hasbro's bottom line comes from Magic. But one thing that came up just a couple of days ago that I think is interesting is an article about how Hasbro is investing $1 billion, which is a huge amount of money, into gaming studios. And they're really trying to become a like AAA gaming company where they're building these really big games. And they already were part of what Baldur's Gate that was really successful. We've seen Monopoly Go, not a AAA game, but be very successful as a mobile game. So we see them really fully embracing this, like, we're going to be a digital gaming company, essentially. If this takes off, I think that could maybe take some of the pressure off Magic. I think there's just so much pressure on the game and on Wizards right now, just because they're responsible for so much of Hasbro's profit. But if we have another, you know, big game that's doing well, maybe that would take a little bit of the pressure off of Magic. But what do you think, Richard? I know you saw this article. What do you think about the game studio idea?
This pigs and slot person was like such a visionary, because here, okay. I actually dug into the numbers, right? Because in our chat, you know, we're talking about this $1 billion investment, and we're like, yeah, Baldur's Gate 3, right? So did you know Baldur's Gate 3 has made roughly, people are guessing, $650 million? Now, if you don't know Baldur's Gate 3, you can check out our Patreon where we play it, but I would argue it's like one of the best games of all time. Like, just like literally like best game period of all time. You can like put it up there. It took like a million years to make or whatever. It's probably like a once in a lifetime thing. You probably can't replicate this. $650 million. Now, Monopoly Go, I don't know what it is, but I'm pretty sure it's slop. Okay. It's like Monopoly mobile game. It's made $5 billion. $5 billion. Okay. Monopoly Go, right? It has made,
that's ridiculous,
5-6 times as much money on what I'm sure is like a tiny fraction of the budget. And if I was a Hasbro exec, I'm like, oh, I can reproduce Monopoly Go, right? I would not sit there and be like, yeah, I can remake Baldur's Gate 3. Okay, so this game studio is just going to make more Monopoly Goes, and they're going to rake in $5 billion over like 2 years, right? Like, that is an insane amount of money. And that's kind of slop, right? Like, you know, like Baldur's Gate 3 is your fine steak. Monopoly goes the slop. Like, anyone even, like, can I search Metacritic? I don't even know how you find a review of Monopoly Go. But, you know, I'm pretty sure it's going to be terrible, right? But it makes money hand over fist. And that's what Wizards is going to do, or Hasbro is going to do. So I don't think this means we're getting AAA titles out of Hasbro. I think we're going to get more Monopoly Goes. And will that fix Magic? I don't think so. I think they'll just keep having Magic trudge along as it is, and it'll just make more money, right? Ooh. But like, Magic Arena is not, you know, Hasbro's digital darling. It's not even Baldur's Gate 3. It's Monopoly Go, right? And that's like the sloppiest of slop, right? So
it is. I think part of what they're trying to do, speaking of Monopoly Go, is, so Monopoly Go, they license their Monopoly IP to another studio. So they're just making a cut off that, right? Like, yes, they generate a huge amount of revenue, but a big chunk of that's going to the people who actually built the game. And I don't remember the name of the company. I had it here before. Scopely, I think, is the company, the developer that they actually licensed the Monopoly IP to. I imagine that making these studios, much like selling Magic cards directly through Amazon or Secret Lair Drops, is a way that Wizards can, or Hasbro can, actually get all that money, right? If you actually own the IP and make the game and sell the game, then that $5 billion is going into your pocket rather than you just getting some licensing fee off of it. So I imagine that's part of what they're going for. I would also say they have shouted out they're building a AAA game called Exodus that's supposed to come out next year. So there are at least some attempts at AAA games in here. It's not all going to be Monopoly Goes, but I'm sure that Monopoly Goes are also going to be a big part of it. What do you think, Grim? Or go ahead, Richard.
I was going to say, what was it like Hasbro One or like, what was that thing that they finished writing off after like $1 billion?
Ah, E1. Yes, E1. Yes. They bought E1 Studios.
What if it's just another E1?
Yeah, that's
the scary actually
part.
Come out of E1?
They got to keep the IP of Peppa the Pig and I think a couple other IPs that they kind of scavenged before they
Daddy
sold
Hasbro.
It off. Yeah.
That's it? Peppa the Pig?
It was considered to be a huge loss. Like, they got some IPs that they kept out of it when they sold it, but they lost billions of dollars on it from everything that you can read about it, even getting to keep those IPs.
Well, then, Peppa the Pig is their savior, I guess.
Peppa Pig Go mobile game. It's going to turn it all around.
Yeah, Peppa Go.
The other part that scares me about this, and I don't know, I'm not super into the video game industry, but I know what I see just come across my social media is a lot of people talking about, like, game studios not doing well, people getting laid off, and, like, this is a tough time to be making AAA games. It makes me worry about the timing of throwing $1 billion that really came from Magic, honestly, because that's the only thing that's making them a ton of money. So taking some of your Magic profits and putting it into gaming studios in 2025 kind of seems like a risky investment to me, but I don't know. Like, is the gaming industry doing better than I think?
I think if it's a live service game. I think live service games have done a very good job of just making, first off, it's free usually, right? And then they get you with all the skins. That's how they do that. But like when it comes to AAA titles, dude, it takes a lot for me to spend $70 on a game.
They're
which
so
is
expensive.
Like really weird because like I'm sure some people will say the exact same thing I've just said and then go and spend like $200 on a skin. Right. So, but like there is something funny about that. But I will say that I think that right now it really does take a lot to make $70. Also get a console when I could just have my computer, which does everything anyways. Right. And then just download some game and then play that for free and then just have fun that way. So that's bad because as I say this, I did just buy a $70 game. But
what did
prior,
you buy?
I bought Silent Hill F. So prior to Silent Hill, I had not bought anything AAA. Actually, it's not even AAA. It is a Konami game. I forget because the one prior to this
considered
was
AAA.
It is a AAA, but like prior to this was like a studio's like passion project to pretty much remake Silent Hill 2. So I don't buy many AAA games though. Like the ones I do buy are usually just like I buy like maybe one a year, two a year.
Interesting.
It's like making Hollywood blockbuster movies. They cost a lot of money and it's high risk. And normally you just reuse some highly profitable IP. None of which Magic has, right?
Yeah.
So it's easier to just make a direct Netflix like exclusive, right? You know, and it's like nice and cheap and can like make its money back. But I would be shocked if they make AAA titles. I think this is all fancy talk to just make another Monopoly Go. Just like how Magic Arena is a top three esports, right? It's just like fancy words, right?
But Richard,
is a direct to Netflix movie, is that considered slop? I'm curious. Does that fall under the slop head?
I guess
direct
if you
to Netflix.
See history repeat itself. You talk about how film is dead, how long form media is dead, how YouTube killed film. How TikTok killed YouTube, right? How like a Reddit post
kills
TikTok.
TikTok?
I don't even watch TikTok videos.
A Reddit
too
post.
Long, right? I just read the title and make my own conclusions, okay? I can't afford 1 minute, Seth. But
it's too much.
I imagine if you talk to some directors or something, you're like, yeah, people are stupid now. Like, go enjoy like my 2.5 hour like artsy movie. But most people want like, you know, watch some
you
slop,
already
right?
See that. You already see that with like modern storytelling, right? Like there's there's heavy hand holding when it comes to like a lot of the points and things that happen inside a movie. It's like, this is Bob. Instead of just letting you figure that out on your own, they have to tell you that this is Bob. This is what's happening, right? Like, but that is, in that regards, I do think that modern storytelling is rough. It's in a bad spot. However, I don't know if this might be bad for studios when you think about direct to Netflix, right? Like direct to Netflix stuff. There has been good direct to like your home streaming platform, right? But you know, the studios care more about that than anything, because then it's like you're not going out to theaters. But yeah, like I do think that modern storytelling is bad. So you know what? I don't know. I think everything's changing. And there's every medium and everything that you're getting into is finding new ways to adapt, right? And changing things up. So you're going to see a lot of things change. And that, you know, goes to whatever hobby it is.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point that a lot of this stuff is not unique to magic. Even if we go all the way back to the slop stuff or like the crossovers and the marketing and all that stuff. And this is something Mark Rosewater pointed out this week in one of his posts. It was pretty much like, hey, you guys realize that it's not like we're the only company that's doing crossovers. Crossovers are like huge right now. Everyone's doing it. Everyone's making tons of money off this. This isn't like Wizards decided all of a sudden that we're going to become the Universes Beyond crossover people. We're just following a trend that is already proven to make tons of money and is popular in all other places. So why wouldn't we also be doing this? So I think it is important to note that it really, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, it isn't really unique to Magic. And it is kind of just like a cultural thing to some extent right now, and where our culture is moving and technology and disruption and so forth. Anyway, one other question about next year before we get to some fish mail. We got a few fish mail to get to. I just realized this. So next year we're getting 7 sets. Do you think that alchemy exists next year? Do you think that, because I feel like alchemy, outside of making Wizards money, I think a big part of the goal of it was to have more content on Arena, right? Like, sets only release every 3 months. Arena gets solved really quick. We can release these Alchemy sets in between set releases to make sure Arena players, you know, always have something new to play with. Do you think that's something that will continue in a world where you actually just get 7 real sets? Like, are you going to be trying to release Alchemy sets 3 weeks after a set release to squeeze them in between 7 sets a year? Or do you think they let Alchemy kind of fade away with this new schedule?
How many cards?
Is the intern
out
still available?
Yeah, is the intern? Yeah, is that guy still there? How many cards are usually in Alchemy? Because I've kind of like stopped paying attention to Alchemy, to be completely honest. If it's like
20, 30, something like that, that would be my guess.
Personally, I do not see why, but I'm sure people play Alchemy and like the cards and like Brawl and stuff. So I could see them still pushing out 20 cards, right? And like with Through the Omen Paths, they have to still keep Alchemy around then, right? Or no, not really. They didn't do anything for this like Final Fantasy Alchemy or anything like that, right?
I'm pretty sure there's no Alchemies for crossover sets. We've never have had an Alchemy for a crossover set. So I guess they could theoretically, but I'd be surprised if they're going to pay more for their license to make an Alchemy set on Arena.
Then, yeah, it'll probably just stick to whatever in-universe sets there
are. So in-universe gets Alchemy still.
It's the same then, right? Because like half the sets will be Universes Beyond, and then the other half will be in-universe. They get Alchemy. No one plays Alchemy except for me. So like I can see why they would cut it off. But also, I'm pretty sure they put no effort into it. But I actually really enjoyed Alchemy, and I was actually very disappointed there's no Final Fantasy Alchemy. Because normally, I draft the set, and then it gets boring, it gets solved. You play the Alchemy draft, and then it adds like a little wrinkle to it, and you play that.
Yep.
Right? If Standard sucks, you play Alchemy. Like, it's not. It's so casual that it doesn't matter, right? People say, like, oh, you know, Alchemy's not balanced, right? But I'm like, neither is Standard, right? So when you play Standard for a week, and then you're done, like, you know, the imbalances or whatever, like, show up, and then you're done with it, right? Then you can play Alchemy for a week. And then you're done with that, and then you can chill for the next set, right? It gives you, like, another burst. Like, all Magic the Gathering is good in short bursts, right? What really, when people say something is good, is, like, can I play, like, 40 hours of it and not be bored of it? And it's very rare for Magic to, like, hit that, right? Like, maybe Final Fantasy Draft did that, right? But most drafts, you're like, after 10 drafts, it's like, kind of sucks, I don't want to play anymore. Then you play Alchemy, right? Fun for like 10 drafts or so. And then if it's not balanced, it'll suck, and then you're done with it, right? So at this casual level, Alchemy, like, does its job, right? The only complaint is it's expensive. Like, you got to pay more money for, like, all these things. But if you're just engaging with the formats at a casual level, it's great, right? And if you're super enfranchised, you're probably bored of Standard already, so you might as well try some Alchemy, right? So it's kind of actually somehow under-marketed. And, like, I told you guys this before, but, like, people think Alchemy balance is a meme. Standard balance is a meme. It makes no difference, right? Like, you just like, ping-pong between broken formats, and it gives you something fresh to do. So I actually hope they keep it going, but not at the expense of real resources, right? I don't want them to cut, like, standard testing or something to make Alchemy.
Right.
But if they're just going to continue doing what they're going to do, like, you might as well just keep Alchemy going. I'm pretty sure it's actually just one person doing it, so, like, whatever, right?
The remix drafts are actually a good point. I think that is, like, a legit upside for limited players to have, like, a remix draft format. I don't know if there'd be another way to do it without doing Alchemy, but I could see how that would be really valuable, even to people who don't necessarily play the actual constructed format. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. I expect Krim's probably right. I'd be surprised if they got rid of it altogether, because there are not a ton of people, but there are people who do play it. So I'd be surprised if they got rid of it altogether. But if they ever were going to, next year would be probably the year to do it. But let's move on and answer some fish mail. We got a couple of fish mail questions to get to. We're going to start off with one from Cole P, who sent me this through email, actually. Says, hey, Seth, longtime listener and fan. I've got a burning piece of fish mail I'd love the squad's opinion on. As someone who loves Magic content, I find myself uniquely frustrated lately, as it seems like a lot of content is becoming outdated and, more importantly, obsolete at a record pace. If I see a deck tech that was made as recently as 6 months ago, I find myself hesitating to watch it because the deck might be completely outdated or missing a new critical piece with a rapid influence of new cards. Deck techs being just an example, I feel like this extends to basically all Magic content as content creators. Does this impact what type of content you make? And if so, how much? I'm curious, Grim. What do you think, like, has the increasing release schedule had any influence on how you make content? Do you feel like stuff gets outdated quicker?
When it comes to gameplay, I find that, like, I am not able, like, to, like, fully, like, by the time the next set comes out, I'm already trying to see if I need to repatch the first 5 decks that I made, right, from the prior season. So it's kind of like this thing where I don't think I've had enough time to, like, fully sit down and dig into the, like, the depth and, like, of every set to figure out what's good or what's not before I go right back to, like, well, maybe this is what makes Dimir good. Maybe this is what makes this good, right? But I do think that there is always a newer Dimir mid-range video, a newer VV how to update VV video, right? So I do think that because of these release cycles and constant new things coming out, it's endless content to be made, but at the same time outdating, like, a lot of stuff, like the poster had asked. So I guess to tie it all back, I don't know. I just make what I want to make, and I don't really mind, right?
Do you find yourself updating decks more, you think? Do you think you're more likely now than a few years ago to be like, I played this deck 6 months ago, but we've had 3 new sets since then, so I'm going to add some new cards to it and make another video of it? Or hasn't that even changed, really?
I've done that, right? Like, yeah. This is a 6-month-old deck. I'm going to try now to add 4 cards to it, see what happens, right? Obviously, there's a lot of meme stuff that comes out with every set. Like, whether it's, like, you want to make Jumbo Cactar work or something like that in Standard, there's always, like, the fun cards to make, but I equally like going back and just updating old deck lists.
I've noticed that with myself. That's one place that it's changed for me is, like, it used to be if I played a deck, and then I look back through the decks I played and been like, I played that deck like a year ago. It's too recent. I'm going to give it a while longer before I revisit it. But now we get so many sets. There's some decks, like, 6 months later, I'm like, oh, like, this deck is actually meaningfully different today because of the cards that have been printed. So I'm already going to do another version of this deck, even though you just did a video of it, you know, 5-6 months ago now. So I think it's sped up things in that sense. I think the other thing it's done for me is it's made me, and I wanted to make this anyway, so it's not because of this, but I think think it's an upside of it. But I think it's one of the upsides of making like some of the history videos and stuff like that, because those are really, if you're talking about the best cards from 1997 or the best combos in the history of Magic, that stuff just gets outdated way less quickly, right? Because it just doesn't change as much with each new set. So I think that's, it's also made those videos a little bit more, makeable for me. But what about you, Richard? Any thoughts on this?
It's too much noise to remember anything now. Like, I distinctly remember playing Innistrad, like OG Innistrad, because we had to sit there and play with it for like 4 months without interruption. And I distinctly remember doing Edge of Eternity's early access, right? So before anyone's even played it, and we're already reading Spider-Man spoilers, and like, I'm already done with Edge of Eternities, right? And we already have Avatar cards. We already have like all these Secret Lair cards. And has anyone had a chance to explore anything in Spider-Man or Edge of Eternities or even like Outlaws of Thunder, like anything, right? Like we really just look at like the top three cards, and before we're done reading them, like the next like year of cards is out and our attention has shifted. And I think long term, that just means like less memories, like less like hardcore fans. Like, you know, I remember playing Thragtusk. I remember playing Liliana. I remember trying to find a 4-drop for my standard deck, right? And I was not reading like 6 months of spoilers at a time, like every single day. And that's gone, right? Like, it doesn't even matter what's in Spider-Man because I'm already onto Avatar. And really, it doesn't even matter because I'm onto Star Trek, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Avatar is already like so old at this point, right? Who cares? Did you know we know what all the firebending, water bending, elemental bendings are? No one cares anymore because we're on to The Office, apparently, right? So it's just this information overload, right? And it's not a Magic problem, right? It's kind of like a societal issue. Like, we have so much news today that everything just blurs together, and you don't have that like old people OJ Simpson chase, you know, where like the whole everyone in the world, like everyone in America, at least, like, you know, was focused on this one singular event because that's all we had. We turned on our TV and that was the only thing there was. And we all focused on it and we thought about it and everyone had that shared experience. Now we just have like 8 million pieces of news and everyone's doing their own thing. And that's how it is with Magic content. And I think long term, in 10 years, we're not going to talk about Spider-Man in the same way we talk about like Innistrad, because we spent like 5 seconds on Spider-Man, whereas we actually spent like 4 months on Innistrad, right? So
and
that
does
work its way into content.
And even others, that's not even just Spider-Man. It's not that Spider-Man's a uniquely bad set or something, but replace it with Edge of Eternities or even Final Fantasy, the greatest set of all time, might not be as memorable as Innistrad was back in its era, just because you got to move on so quickly to the next thing. So yeah, that's a really good point. All right, one more fish mail real quick. This one comes from @funkfu749, says, hashtag MTG Goldfish, I know you guys were originally iffy on map tokens when they came out. Now, after 2 years, what are your thoughts on them? Krim. What about map tokens? I forgot that we even were meh on them at the time, but apparently we were. I'm going to trust you on this one, Funk.
I mean, I do remember us talking about the fact that they are sorcery speed, right?
Yes.
The sorcery speed part is still annoying, but obviously I think it plays nicely, right? Now, having seen a bigger picture of Standard, it leaving an additional game piece for you to like interact with, we've seen this matter numerous times across the board. That map token off of Spyglass Siren, or in this case, when I give the map off of Get Lost.
That's a real downside.
It is a real downside, right? So I've actually really enjoyed how they've played so far. Because in a way, they also allow the opponent or the person with the map to pseudo surveil. It really adds to sequencing, right? There's lots of sequencing depth to gameplay when it comes to adding just a simple map token. So I've really enjoyed them now that I've had them.
Yeah, I like them too. I think they've played really well, and I like the smoothness they add to decks. And now that I've gotten to play them a bunch, I think the sorcery speed thing's perfectly fine too. I think it actually even makes sense to some extent to not have like onboard combat tricks, like instant speed during combat or whatever. So even with the sorcery speed restriction, I like them. I think they turned out pretty good.
Are we talking about power level or design wise?
I don't know.
I
either one.
like, I would say let's go with both, right? Like, I mean, I like him from both points so far. I like them as a power level because they don't seem so busted that, like, we have to ban every card that's using it, right? Because we're talking, like, a Toon with Aether was banned, right? So, it is powerful in that it leaves this extra game piece that adds in a whole different kind of, like, interaction or action you can take on each of your turns. Or you could sack said token and do what it in a way feels lots of things. So I kind of really like it from all points.
I really like it. I think anything that adds an extra game piece that costs at most one mana to activate. I think two mana is too heavy and like is not usable anymore. But anything at one mana like starts adding a lot of like choices. Like do you play your curve? What do you do with your turn? You have multiples of these things. So even today, I still don't know how to evaluate them. Like, what do you really, how much of a card do you count it for? Like, it's very hard to figure out, but it adds a lot of like thought. So I think we should make more. Like, I don't like food is another game piece, but at 2 mana, 3 life, it's like very expensive. But also like food, there's no choice, right? You always just crack it whenever you can. But like, yeah. I don't know what it could be, like a 1 mana thing that surveils one or scries one or something, like even without the, you know, adding a +1/+1, like I think would be a very interesting game piece that just gives you more decision points like every single game. And you can also just make multiples of them too, right? Like imagine if it was just like a scry one for 1 mana, but like your removal spell like gave you 2 of them, and then you can just scry one whenever you feel like it. Even at sorcery speed, I think would be very interesting. So I think they should do more.
Are clues outdated to you, Richard? I'm curious.
Clues are too expensive.
Too expensive?
Like you very rarely break your curve to crack a clue unless you're in like super desperation mode. You know what I mean? Like 2 mana is a huge cost that you usually don't do till like, you know, you're out of gas and then you break the clue unless you're like actually digging for something. Whereas like 1 mana, I think. So I don't know how you would split it, but I want more tough. 1 mana. 1 mana things that you can actually play.
One mana means sorcery speed is what I'm going to assume. And then 2 mana, you can then add in like maybe you could crack it whenever.
I don't know, though, because, we're going to go way long on this fishmail, but weren't bloods instant speed? And those were 1 mana, right?
Oh,
so I don't think there's
a
hard rule that 1 mana can't be at instant speed.
Bloods
it might depend
suck,
on
though.
The effect, but... I don't know about that. People still play Blood Tithe Harvester in everyone's favorite Pioneer format.
That's because it's Blood Tithe Harvester.
Blood Tithe Harvester itself is good, right?
So, I guess that's true. It's a good card. But anyway, I think those are our fish mail for this week. Thanks for sending in the questions. Richard, how do people send in more questions for the future?
All right. Hit us up at MTGGoldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 556 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.